It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding local nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. KMTS Connections connects you to everything that matters in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show. We are toward the end of National Public Health Week. We've got some folks from Garfield County Public Health that are going to be talking about a number of different areas of public health. Natalie Sevdos is an environmental health specialist. Drew Schelling is a registered dietitian. Mason Hostat is a public health specialist. And then Laura Little is public health nurse. We're going to go left to right, although that doesn't mean anything to you listening, but that's okay. For me, it helps. We're going to start with Natalie. Environmental health specialist is your title. You actually inspect restaurants and check for compliance with laws and that kind of thing, and make sure that, you know, they're keeping the food refrigerated when they should be refrigerated and keeping it hot. What are the magic numbers? Is it 40 and 140 degrees?
Yeah, that's pretty close.
Okay.
It's 41 and 135.
So it's changed a little bit since way back in, you know, the dark ages when I learned about this stuff when I took home ec. So 41 degrees and 135.
Yes.
Explain your process. How often do you inspect restaurants? And it's not just restaurants, right? It's anybody that prepares food, or how?
Yeah, most of what I do is inspect restaurants, and those are typically done twice a year. We do have, so we call them retail food establishments. So that's anyone that is selling or preparing food for the public. So we also do grocery stores, gas stations, bars, convenience stores, and things like that.
And again, the state, I think, has jurisdiction over this area, but in this case, Garfield County has chosen to take on that responsibility. And, I mean, county government is an extension of the state government anyway, and so that's kind of how this all shakes out logistically, you might say.
That's correct. So the state, most counties have local control over their restaurant inspections. The state contracts them out to us.
Which I guess would make sense. As opposed to having a satellite office in every county in the state or sending someone out from a big office in Denver. Kind of makes sense to have somebody local.
Yeah, it makes a lot more sense logistically. We also know a lot more about the community and how it works. And we have a better response time for complaints and outbreaks. And then we also have a better response time for doing follow-ups because we are right here in town.
So complaints and outbreaks, do you actually conduct investigations, would you call them, if there's a complaint or there seems to be a number of similar types of complaint from the same establishment?
We do respond to all complaints that we get. Luckily, we don't get very many illness complaints. Usually the complaints that we get are about unsanitary conditions. Luckily, we don't have very many outbreaks either. But if we were to get a lot of illnesses kind of linked back to one place, we would definitely do an investigation.
What's your inspection process? What are the things that you look at when you look at a retail food establishment?
So we do have a checklist that we work off of, and the violations are broken down into three different categories. So the most severe are what we call foodborne illness risk factors, and then we have critical violations and non-critical violations. So we definitely like to focus on the foodborne illness risk factors, because those are the things that if they're not in compliance, that could directly lead to somebody becoming sick.
So this would definitely, when we're talking about temperature, food temperature, that would definitely come under the foodborne illness heading, right?
Yes, definitely.
As well as cleaning cooking surfaces and that kind of thing?
Yep. So proper hygiene and sanitation and food temperatures as well.
Have you ever, I'm not going to ask you specifics, have you ever been in a situation where it was necessary because of the inspection to, in the inspection world, like a building department, they'd call it red tag a facility or something like that? Or is it typically when you discover something, you say, hey, you need to work on this, and then you follow up with that same establishment later?
So for all of the critical violations, we have to correct it one way or another. The ideal way is we try to correct on site if we can. So that's kind of our first go-to action. And then if we can't do that, we either do an in-person follow-up or we have them contact us within a reasonable time frame explaining to us how they corrected the violation.
When you say corrected on site, you mean while you're there?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. How long have you been? It's a couple of years, right? You were here last year on today. So exactly a year ago, you were, and I want to say it was like 6 months at that time?
Yeah. We officially took over from the state on January 1st of 2016.
And you actually started from the very beginning of the program, right?
Yes. I'm the only one that has been here since the start, other than our environmental health manager who brought this program here. But I'm the only inspector that's been here since the start. And now we have a second inspector as well who's also fully trained. So it's very exciting.
Okay. So what's usually the reaction when you show up at an establishment? They probably know you. You see them twice a year. So after that point, it's just kind of like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, it varies. I know it's not we're not the person that they're the most excited to see, of course. But, you know, we do have a good relationship with them, especially as time goes on. We're seeing them a couple times a year, so they know us and they know what to expect from us.
Do you give letter grades or anything like that, or it's just either pass or fail?
We don't. We don't even really have pass or fail. We always go over the report with them, which is our checklist, and make sure that they understand what they need to do to improve.
And again, as I recall from the conversation last year, the whole point is to make sure that the food is safe for the public.
Correct.
It's not about, you know, taking some kind of action or something like that. It's about, well, is it safe? If it's not, then let's correct the problem.
Correct.
Radon is also something that you wanted to talk about today. I know you're not the radon expert in the office, but of course it's still in the same department, you might say. Radon is very common in here, in this area. It's a geologic thing, just the way the geology is in this area. That's why it's fairly common inside enclosed spaces, businesses, and homes.
That is correct. So in addition to inspecting restaurants, I also inspect childcare facilities for sanitation and schools for sanitation and safety. And so one new regulation that was passed recently is childcare facilities are required to be testing for radon. So I've been working closely with Morgan Hill, who is our air quality program coordinator here at the county. And so we have been working together to make sure that the child care facilities are getting their radon testing, and then if the results are coming back high, kind of what the next steps are.
Radon, if I remember right, is like one of the top causes of lung cancer.
It's the second leading cause of lung cancer after smoking, and it is Garfield County and Colorado in general has elevated levels of radon. So the only way for people to know if their home or if their facility is high is for them to test.
And where can folks get those radon test kits if they want to test the home or their business for whatever reason?
They can get them at the Garfield County Public Health Office in Rifle and in Glenwood Springs, and also at the Clear Office in Carbondale.
Is there a charge for the kits?
It's one free kit per citizen.
Okay. So again, just stop by the public health office on 14th in Rifle, or where else? At the Clear office in Carbondale.
Yes. And or at Garfield County Public Health in Glenwood Springs, right next to Valley View Hospital.
Okay. In the old original hospital.
Right.
All right. Thanks, Natalie. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're off the hook for the rest of the day.
All right.
At least as far as the interview is concerned. I'm sure you have plenty of other things you still need to get accomplished. We'll take a quick break. When we'll come back, we'll visit with everybody else. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this week, or actually starting on Monday, finishing up this weekend, is National Public Health Week. So we're talking with a few folks from Garfield County Public Health today. Drew Schelling is a registered dietitian, and we're going to talk about cooking matters and WIC. Cooking matters. Let's start with that first.
It's in the their location. So we meet participants in their location. So Cooking Matters, we're nationwide. We're part of Share Our Strengths. We're part of the No Kid Hungry campaign. So it's a really, really cool program. I'm actually the coordinator here in Garfield County. And what I really, really love about our program is we're teaching participants things that are life skills. So we're teaching them how to fight disease instead of feeding it. So when I think about public health, we really stand for primary prevention. And when we think about what primary prevention is, it's preventing disease. So we're giving these families skills and resources so that we can prevent that disease from occurring later on in life.
So what is this program like? You say you actually go to people.
Yes. Yeah, so 6 weeks long, 2 hour long classes. We meet agencies and organizations in their location. And we teach cooking classes. We teach food safety. We also teach nutrition education.
Which, of course, is where the whole registered dietitian.
That's where the registered dietitian
comes into play.
Yeah.
So it seems like over the last 5 years, we've heard a lot of changes. When I was a kid, as you know, we mentioned back in the dark ages when we were still using the oil lamps. Not exactly, but close enough. There was the food triangle, right? The pyramid, you know, where you've got your breads and stuff like that on the bottom, and then what was at the top? Stuff that you're not supposed to eat a lot of. And that's actually changed somewhat in the last few years, hasn't it?
It sure has. So the new updated version from the United States Department of Agriculture, both the pyramid and the plate are from the same people, but it's the plate now. And the idea behind that is portion control. I think that's the biggest thing that Americans have a hard time with.
If you're eating too much, even of a good thing, it's still too much.
Exactly. So an avocado, still a good fat, right?
Right.
But an avocado is 400 calories.
But it's good calories.
Good calories. Portion control. That's key.
I have a hard time with this one myself, so that's I understand what you're saying. So do folks sign up for the Cooking Matters class, or how do they get involved with it, Drew?
So they can contact me. I'm actually in the Rifle location, so that's going to be across from City Market on Railroad.
625-5200 is the main number, right?
Yep, 625-5200. My extension is 2036.
2036, 2036. And again, Cooking Matters is available for who? Who can sign up for it?
So anyone can sign up. We do have income guidelines, but anybody is welcome. And so we offer a families curriculum, which is a really great thing because the child gets involved, the parent gets involved. We also offer a parents curriculum, and that's a lot around food parenting. So how not to raise a picky eater, how to introduce.
My parents could have used that one.
There we go. Not making them sit at the table to finish their peas. My mom made me do that.
Really?
One.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
So that we're negatively associating a good thing, peas, a really, really good thing, with a bad thing.
With a bad experience.
I have that memory of sitting at the counter having to finish those peas. Those awful peas. And see, now I never eat them.
Really? Interesting. I find your taste changes over time, though, as well. Things that I couldn't stand when I was a kid, now is like, okay, sure. Pile them on. The more the better.
And I agree.
And we come back to the same subject again.
And it takes trying it. They say it takes trying it at least 20 times before you're actually going to like it. Kids have this thing called food neophobia.
So what about WIC? WIC, of course, stands for Women, Infants, and Children. And, again, this is it's also a program of the Department of Agriculture, isn't it?
Yeah. So anyone, again, it's a supplemental programming.
And so that what that means is it's to help them get through the month.
And we're talking about milk, and I don't remember the other, or like two other
so,
things.
So all kinds of things. And okay. We actually just got a new updated list. And the updates, we have string cheese, which is nice because it's actually in the packages, so the moms can buy them, and a good snack, good source of protein, good source of fiber. So the string cheese, that's a nice, convenient source of protein.
One of my all-time favorites.
There we go. And then we yogurt, that's another change.
Okay.
And just like with Cooking Matters, there are income guidelines, so you do have to qualify. Some other good changes is we've moved over, so like SNAP, food stamps, WIC has moved over to a card, an EBT card.
Okay.
So that's nice. We used to have a check that you would take to the grocery store mm-hmm. with your WIC-approved foods.
Right. What is the difference between SNAP or food stamps and WIC?
So income guidelines for WIC are a little higher, which is nice. And then SNAP, we're serving adults with WIC. The specific focus is going to be on women, infants, and children, women that are pregnant, postpartum breastfeeding, children 0 to 5. That's what our program specifically serves. The other cool thing that we offer is nutrition consults.
And what's a nutrition consult? So you would come in and you would tell me that I'm eating too much and I need to eat better things?
Well,
in a nutshell,
we try to help parents. They certainly do the best they can. We give them assurance. We track their baby's height and weight, make sure they're growing properly.
Okay.
So that kind of thing. And then they come in and they get their supplemental food. And then another cool change is we're actually going to be a little more mobile, and we're going to actually be able to do some consults via phone.
Okay. And again, if anybody has any questions about Cooking Matters or the WIC program, they can give you a call directly at 625-5200. Your extension is 2036.
Certainly. And also WIC, we're in two locations. WIC is in Glenwood next to the Cancer Center at Valley View. That's the Garfield County Public Health Building. And then in Rifle, again, across from City Market on Railroad.
Again, in the public health offices in Glenwood and Rifle.
Okay. Yep.
Thanks, Drew.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
We'll take a quick break and visit with Mason and Laurel in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon, we're talking about National Public Health Week, which wraps up this weekend. It's April 3rd through the 9th. We talked with Natalie and Drew about, those restaurant food safety inspections, WIC, Cooking Matters. So Mason Hostat is a public health specialist. Specifically, you work with child fatality prevention.
So the area of focus that I have with the department is around injury prevention. So I am the child fatality prevention team coordinator for the county. We are required by the state to review all preventable child fatalities in our county or our jurisdiction. And so working on that, we meet quarterly to review cases of preventable child death. And then we also work on prevention efforts. Right now, we were given some supplemental funding from the state to begin a safe sleep initiative in the county. So we will be focusing on that starting in May, giving trainings to providers throughout the county, pediatric providers, and other organizations that are that we're working with, and then we will have some pack and plays that we'll be able to provide to families in need in the county that may not have it, and then we'll go from there.
Laurel is kind of has a similar area of influence. Laurel, you're a public health nurse, and you also deal with immunizations and communicable disease control.
Correct.
Communicable. Sorry, I missed a syllable there.
I also serve on the child fatality prevention team.
So the two of you work together quite
mm-hmm.
a bit.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
No wonder you're giving each other such a hard time.
Well,
yes.
We try to keep each other in line.
So I'm trying to take each one of those things that Mason mentioned kind of in order. You mentioned sleep, safe sleep. Mm-hmm. You know, this is something that has changed. When I was a kid, of course, I slept in an old wooden crib with the vertical bars that were, what, about 4 inches apart, 5 inches apart.
Right.
With a hard mattress.
The hard mattress was fine.
Okay. Okay. So that part was okay.
That part was okay.
That wasn't a danger to me.
No.
But these things tend to change over time. And I don't know if it's about the research or if it's as, you know, we learn more and more about how babies sleep and how they develop.
I would agree with that. Yes. So, the recommendations from the American Association of Pediatrics changed because they started in 1992 as a task force to try and combat SIDS, which is sudden infant death syndrome. Some of that has changed to be like a sudden unexpected infant death, and there's various reasons for that. But that first task force found that it might be beneficial to sleep instead of having a child positioned prone, to have a child being positioned on the side. Well, there wasn't research at the time what that change, making that change in baby sleep pattern would do. And so then found out that it wasn't necessarily as safe. So it was safer than being prone, but it wasn't the safest. And so that task force continued to meet and then grow recommendations, and then there was a time in which it was back preferred, but side, but no prone. And now it's back to sleep for every sleep. And that is just because of the research has shown that, which is why policy changes, is because we now have research. So people weren't putting their child on the side before, they were putting them prone.
And what you mean by prone is you're talking about laying the baby on the stomach.
So right.
That's never good.
Never good.
Never good.
Never good.
And so the preferred method of putting the baby down is on the back.
On the back.
So what kind of outreach are you planning? You said in May is when you're going to start with this?
Yes. So we're starting with our providers in the county to try and get everybody on the same page across the county regarding the new recommendations. So last year, the AAP, the American Association of Pediatrics, came out with new recommendations. And so we're trying to just make sure that everybody is on the same page with those. And then we'll branch out and at some point have a larger community type of training situation where we'll invite people from the public to be a part of that. The Pack and Plays will be partnering with Valley View Hospital as well as Family Visitor Program to be able to provide those Pack and Plays. So there will be a application process that either a nurse visitor or somebody would have to provide to us, and then we'll be able to provide them a Pack and Play.
Laurel, immunization kind of plays into that as well. And, mm-hmm. you know, we talk about the last 5 years or 10 years or so with studies and that sort of thing. Was it one study that was done that questioned immunization that was debunked? But there's still a lot of misconception about the dangers of immunization. Immunizations actually are completely safe.
Correct. Immunizations. And it's interesting that we're discussing this now because lack of immunizations is actually been found to be a risk factor for SIDS. So it's as well as many other things. Smoking around the infant, not having the infant immunized, bed sharing is another big one that we're trying to discourage through this campaign. And so all of those things can be related to a higher risk of sudden infant death or unexpected infant death.
So the bottom line, immunization absolutely is better and more advisable than not immunizing.
Well, that is what we believe in public health, yes. And I think the one you were referring to that was debunked was MMR causing autism. Mm-hmm. And that was thoroughly and completely unequivocally debunked.
Right. So, like I don't remember the details, but there was one study that said there was a connection. But there was something about the way they conducted the study that it was not
scientific. The person that did the study was totally discredited. So,
Which is never a good thing for someone you want to believe, you know.
Correct. And so it can be confusing for parents. And we try to give parents, you know, the information and the correct places to get that information so that they can make informed decisions.
Well, because every parent wants to take good care of their kids, and they want them to be healthy. And like you say, with conflicting information, sometimes it can be difficult.
Right. And with the age of the internet, you know, there are a lot of very good sources of information out there.
Don't get me started.
Okay.
Communicable disease control is also another area of interest that you deal with.
Yes. And our immunizations, of course, play right into that because they're preventing that they're vaccine preventable diseases that would be communicable diseases. So, but there are things that we don't have immunizations for. So we do monitor what we call reportable conditions, and those are set by mandate at the state level and or federal.
What are some examples of those? Would you call them a disease, or would you more refer to them by the symptoms that they present?
Well, the reportable diseases, the conditions are usually by disease. So, instance, measles, you know, mumps, tuberculosis, some of the foodborne illnesses like salmonella, E. coli.
Well, measles, mumps, and tuberculosis are preventable, though, right? I mean, there's an immunization for those, whereas
there's an immunization for measles, mumps, and rubella. That's the MMR.
Right.
Tuberculosis there is a vaccine for tuberculosis that is used in some countries, but we do not use it in the United States because it is short-lived and not as it's the United States has determined it's not effective.
So, which is probably why you want to track any cases, because you want to see if there are pockets or outbreaks or that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And so, So we definitely are very involved if there's ever a case of tuberculosis in our county.
Kind of like, forgive me for being a little bit of a layman here, but on the local level, a bit like the CDC. You know what I mean? In other words, you're keeping track of these things so that you know how they're moving around, and say maybe Carbondale has a little bit higher than normal instance of something that you want to keep an eye on and see if it spreads.
Correct. And if there's an outbreak in a facility or a school, nursing home, then putting in measures that will try to prevent the spread of that.
Okay. I made it a point of giving Drew's contact information because it seems like she deals a lot with the public. For the two of you, it doesn't seem as necessary. You know, you're talking about the outreach in May, Mason. So presumably you're going to get the word out when you're ready to start having those conversations. Or would it make sense if folks knew how to get a hold of you? Of course, public health office is 625-5200 if anybody has any questions about what we talked about today or public health in general.
Glenwood Springs public health office is 945-6614.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I could have mentioned that as well. There's more than one number, right?
Yes.
And, of course, they can answer questions there at the front desk. Of course, you give low-cost immunizations on a regular basis. Anything else that we did not talk about today that is handled at the public health office?
Well, in regards to immunization, just to let people know that we do have immunization clinics every day of the week, and we advise people to call and make an appointment for those. We do take Medicaid, CHP Plus, Medicaid for children, I should say. And we do contract with three insurance companies so we can bill insurance. But if someone is uninsured or if money is an issue, it's public health policy to never deny an immunization to any child who can't afford it. So,
okay. Mason, anything else you'd like to add?
No. Well, we are also starting a 5-year program around suicide prevention in Garfield County. We're going to work on another community-based outreach around suicide prevention for working-age men, 25 to 64. We were awarded a grant from the state for that work. That will start in July, and it is for 2017 to 2022.
Okay. Well, 25 to 64 would be right in the middle of our demographic.
And that is what the high – that is our most at-risk population
in Garfield County.
Okay. So we'll look forward to that in July, as well as the safe sleep stuff starting in May.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't hear from you before, I guess we'll see you next year around the same time.
Sure.
Around the first week of April. Should we just put it on the calendar now, since this seems to be becoming a regular thing?
Well, we probably will want to
come
back when we're in the middle of that public campaign.
Sure. Right.
This is also a good time to mention that we do have certified car seat checkers on our staff in both offices, and that is a service that is free of charge. Advise, again, to call ahead and make an appointment.
So does that suggest you'll help put the car seat in as well? Because that can sometimes be a challenge.
Oh, absolutely. And yes. I mean, people can bring a car seat that they haven't even taken out of the box yet if they need to,
so,
and we can help them.
Certified car seat checks.
I did one. The mother was due 4 weeks, so I did one last week, and I installed her in a newborn seat.
There's somebody that's thinking ahead.
She was,
and again,
yes.
That's in both Rifle and Glenwood. Again, the Glenwood Public Health Office is 945-6614. In Rifle, it's 625-5200. Again, for the car seat checks as well as the immunizations, make an appointment. Just keep things as simple as you can. Drew, anything else you'd like to add?
There was a couple things that I forgot to mention about Cooking Matters. One thing that I really wanted to talk about when we're talking about healthy eating, I think, and I want to end with this message, small changes. I noticed when the new year started, 2017, people were going to lose 20 pounds, right? The way to achieve your nutrition goals, make it a small change. One little thing at a time. Move on to the next thing.
All right. I can take a hint.
Okay. Oh, there we go. No.
And Natalie, I told you were off the hook, but is there anything else that you would like to mention as we close things today?
I didn't really talk about our educational program with retail food, and so we do offer free quarterly classes, and those are in Rifle, Glenwood, and Carbondale on a rotating basis, and we've had great turnout so far. We just had our latest one this past Monday for Public Health Week in Glenwood, and we had about 100 people.
Wow. And again, that's for retail.
That's for food safety, correct,
okay.
For retail food.
So if anybody would like to sign up in the future, call and get on the list would be the best way to do that?
They can do that. We don't have the date for our next class. It'll be in July in Rifle. People can kind of keep posted on our website. It'll be up there when we figure that date out.
The Garfield County website?
Yes.
Okay, so garfield-county.com.
Correct.
All right, so stay in. And what is the cost for that for retail folks?
It's free, and okay. It's geared toward restaurant workers, but anybody can attend. We have had some other people that were just interested come, and that's fine as well.
All right. So, again, just keep checking the county website, garfield-county.com. If it's not on the front page, public health is in the little drop-down on the right-hand side of the website. And Laurel, you wanted to add something as well.
Yeah, I wanted to add that we do another service that we provide that has to do with communicable disease is that we do free HIV testing. No criteria. Anyone can come in and have a free HIV screening test.
Of course, it's confidential.
Of course it is. And we do that in both offices. We have kind of a standing time of, I don't want to say this wrong. In the Glenwood office, it's the fourth Tuesday afternoon of each month.
But you could call and find out.
I believe it's the second in Rifle. Or people can just call and make an appointment. We also have free hepatitis C screening tests for people that are high risk. And high risk for hepatitis C would include a lot of the lifestyle things like IV drug users or people who've gotten a tattoo while incarcerated, things like that. But also, and what people really need to know is that anyone born between 1945 and 1965, in other words, us baby boomers, should have at least one hepatitis C test because...
Why is that?
Well, because the majority of the hepatitis C cases are in that age group. That's for a lot of reasons.
Interesting.
Yeah. Carry the burden of disease.
Say that again, Mason.
Baby boomers carry the burden of disease. So it's something like 70% of all chronic hepatitis C cases are people born between 1945 and 1965.
They also carry the burden of Gen Xers. But that's a story for another time.
I love it.
Thank you all very much. Again, this is National Public Health Week. It wraps up this Sunday. It's the 3rd through the 9th. Anytime you want to learn more about Garfield County Public Health, you can go to the county's website, garfield-county.com. Again, just on the drop-down menu, go down to County Health. It's not in elected offices. It's toward the bottom of the list.
Public Health, yes.
And did I say something?
You said County Health.
Okay, yeah.
Public Health. That's how it's listed on there. It's Public Health Department.
Public Health. So it's going to be, it's in alphabetical order, but it will be in the bottom section. Again, Public Health, you can learn more about that. You can learn about that retail food safety class that Natalie was talking about. You can learn about Cooking Matters, which Drew was visiting about. You can learn about those two upcoming programs, suicide prevention in July, and then the Safe Sleep Outreach, which will start sometime in May as well, that we talked with Mason and Laurel about, as well as immunizations and everything else. You guys are welcome to come back anytime, especially, in May and July when you kick off those programs. But we're here. It's not like I'm going anywhere. I'll be sitting right here waiting for you guys to schedule another time to come in and
Thank
visit.
You.
Thanks.
You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.